Hi, this is Jeremy Raddick. I was Gareth in the Doctor Who TV movie, and you're listening to Gallifrey Public Radio.
I'm Stephen John Drew from the official GunnaGeek.com show, a weekly geek news podcast that is a part of the Gunna Geek Network, just like the show you're checking out now. Shows on the network are individually owned, and opinions expressed may not reflect others. Find other awesome geeky shows at GunnaGeekNetwork.com.
Hi everyone, it's Kier. We wanted to take a moment before getting into today's cast to just let everyone know that Charles will be devoting his time and energy to some other great projects that he has on his plate, so he'll be stepping down from the GPR cast. We do thank him so much for his contributions, insights, and his humor these past few months, and we hope everyone keeps up to speed with him on the Space Javelin podcast, as well as all the Whovian conventions that we know that we're going to see him at. We wish you the best, Charles. Allons-y.
You've dialed into Gallifrey Public Radio. We're a podcast dedicated to positive enjoyment of everything in the Doctor Who spectrum. Join us for weekly discussions ranging from Hartnell to Whittaker and well beyond. Your hosts are Jay Whitten.
I choose Death by Scotland.
Kier Hansen.
You had literally one job.
And Haley Malley.
Darth Vader, he's a villain, right?
We travel through classic and new Who, explore the extended Whovian universe, and play a few games from time to time if we're left unsupervised. Oh, and a word on spoilers. We do discuss recent news, content that has been officially released, and the occasional interesting rumor, but don't worry. If we look too far into the future, we'll give you fair warning.
Welcome to episode 319 of Gallifrey Public Radio, where the winter doldrums can be easily overcome with this simple pick-me-up life hack, a quick soak in a meltdown nuclear reactor. It does wonders for the complexion, too. I'm Haley.
I'm Jay.
And I'm Kier. This week, we find an unfamiliar piece of costume jewelry in the bottom of a forgotten box of rocks that we used to collect as kids, and we end up saying a rather abrupt and painful farewell to a dear, dear friend in the season 14 story, The Hand of Fear. Haley, I don't think you knew what you were in for.
Nope.
When you started watching this one. So I'm going to start with you to get your quick reactions to the story and your twist.
I liked this story. You got a little bit of the person we think the bad guy isn't really the bad guy. And then at the very end, JK, really the bad guy.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Then abruptly, goodbye, companion.
Yes.
You can't break up with me. I break up with you.
it felt very like kind of Romeo and Juliet thing, you know, just come in. Oh, she's dead. I'm going to kill myself. She wakes. Oh, he's dead. I'm going to kill myself. If the two of you just communicated a little bit better. Yeah, but absolutely so. But yes, I do agree with you. This is just all on the whole. This was just a solid story. Even if you take the twist out of it and just enjoy the story itself. It's an interesting, you know, way of tackling the plot development. Jay, what was your previous exposure specifically with this? I mean, I know that this is a kind of a pivotal moment in Whovian history. So does that mean you've watched it more often than some of the ones that bookended, or less, or?
I know I've seen it at least once. I can't. It seemed more familiar than some of the other ones, but I can't tell you how many times I've actually. But I had forgotten right up until like halfway through the fourth episode that this was Sarah Jane's exit. Like I was like, there's something about this episode or the story that bothers me. What the heck is it? And I could not place it until we get like halfway through. I was like, Oh no, that's why those like overalls look familiar.
Yep. It's the overalls. I figured that was going to be the trigger for you. The moment it came up and said, Oh no, she's wearing the pink stripe. Oh no, it's that one.
No, honestly, the only thing I thought when I saw the overalls, I was like, oh yeah. Cause that's exactly what she's wearing in the Pop Funko figure that I have on my shelf. And so that's where my brain went. I'm like, oh, that's why it looks familiar. I did not allow my brain to go past that because it hurts.
You blocked this part out.
It did.
We're gonna dive a little deeper into that that sort of quick turn and resulting stab in the feels in a little bit. Mm-hmm. But just in general about the story itself. So Haley, you alluded to the fact that we're dealing with something where it's who's the baddie? You're the baddie, not the baddie. Misinterpreted the baddie. Oh wait, no, it is the baddie. At a couple of different turns, do you feel in any way that toying with us, as far as where our allegiances or our compassions should lie, had any impact on the viewing pace of the story? You know, because we deal with something where it's like, how many times are we going to evacuate the reactor and then say, oh, no, we got it. Everybody come back in. Oh, no, wait, no, evacuate again. Let's get everybody out. And then we have to, you know, start doing a little bit of chasing to other planets and things as well. So did it still feel like it flowed well for you?
I think so. This episode didn't feel as repetitive as a lot of others we've seen, I don't think. So mm-hmm. I liked it a lot. You know, we got a quarry shot, which is always a great place to start a Doctor Who story.
But it was legitimately a quarry. They weren't saying that it was an alien plant. Amazing. Unprecedented.
I felt betrayed.
I love that, actually. Like, using a quarry as a quarry, it's brilliant.
And using it, like, to the point of a lot of... we've got explosives. We've yep. got physical danger. We've got people yeah. buried alive. I mean, this was...
I feel like this episode had everything you could ever have in any Doctor Who story. You know, we had the quarry. We had, oh my gosh, is the companion dead? We had some mind control. Mm-hmm. We had in the facility or compound or military base or whatever we got to go on a spaceship. Mm-hmm. We got to go to Earth. And then we got to go to another planet. We got a good alien, an alien who's not the bad guy, but is the bad guy. Like, every single thing yeah. that a Doctor Who episode could be about was in this story.
Yeah.
That's very true.
I think there are some aspects to this, again, you know, when we deal with the opening segment, you know, it's something that's just indicative of these handful of seasons throughout, where you get this very unusual drop you in the middle of a sequence kind of open, where you've got to figure out, you know, that this is going to be the setup for what's going to be dealt with in about roughly 6 minutes when the Doctor and his friend or friends arrive. But this one is particularly odd from the start. You know, as we're seeing, you know, the Eldred must die and all of these things getting thrown out there and very little to go on, because these figures are on this frozen planet, and Castria is just it very, very strange. And then it immediately jumps so far away from that you've got to wonder, wait a second, how did the hand get to Earth, or was it passing Earth at the time, how did we get to where we did? You know, but it doesn't give you the opportunity to really want to pick that apart, because the sequence that follows with the mind controlled Sarah Jane is just so cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you get so wrapped up in it. Jay, we've seen Sarah Jane under the influence. I don't mean under the influence. Well, yeah, I kind of do mean. I mean literally under the influence. Mm-hmm. On a number of occasions. Was this something where, I don't know, did you have a particular take or a particular read on the way that she, knowing now in retrospect, that this was the last time we were going to see her go through this bit, if you want to call it that, that struck you a little differently, made you feel a little different about it, or did it feel like another one of the, oh, we're going to do this bit again? Okay, I gotcha.
No, I like the fact that in this one, it was a bit more, she had a bit more emotion. Like every other time we've had a mind control Sarah Jane, it's, you know, her mind is wiped blank and she's following programming. Mm-hmm. Where in this one, it feels like whatever it is that happened, she believes what she is doing here. Mm-hmm. And she was actually able to like portray some emotion, like, no, 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 you don't understand. Elders must live. You know, it was this actual like, almost conversation. It didn't seem like that I have to kill this person. Mm-hmm, it, mm-hmm. So yeah. It really did add a few layers to it, and it was a very enjoyable thing.
Absolutely. Well, we found that in a couple of cases, like when Driscoll finds the ring as well,
mm-hmm.
you know, and they both, he and Sarah Jane, they have moments of seeming lucidity, where mm-hmm. they're just conversing. You know, I'm sorry, I didn't find anything in the reactor. I'm sorry. I'll go back. I'll put the suit back on. And I'll go look for it if you want. And you know, we know what's already going on. But I'm thinking to myself, wow, you know, Eldred getting in their head is a pretty subtle puppet master mm-hmm. in that regard.
Well, and honestly, it seems like this is the more kind of believable mind control, where it's like, you know, you don't want anyone knowing that they're under the influence until, you know, they try and do something that counteracts what they're supposed to be doing. Mm-hmm. So it's like, yeah, if it's something that, you know, that is just a normal thing, like, yeah, absolutely play it that way. It's so much more, it's so much better that way.
Agreed. Yeah.
So
there are a lot of aspects in this story from a technical stance that I was really satisfied with. I love some of the location shots.
Some of the camera angles, too, I don't think we've seen before.
A number that were sort of partial overheads and stuff?
Yeah, or like low shots, like up into the frame and things like that.
Mm-hmm. Kind of wonder. We'll have to see whether whether this is indicative of just the work that that we were getting specifically from, well, I know, let's see, I'm trying to think who at the time would have been involved in a lot of our cinematography, or at least director of photography. I don't think they really had a director of photography role. So, I mean, if probably fell a lot on Lenny Mayne to work with the camera crew directly, but yeah, we'll just see. I know from the location shots to even when we got back onto the soundstage, the lighting in this, especially when we're back on Castria, you know, and going through the caves and such, I thought the lighting was just kind of gorgeous. It wasn't afraid at times to be unusually dark.
Mm-hmm.
You get this tendency where there's always at least some sort of an overhead spot that's helping us through the cave so that our principal character who's in the frame is well illuminated for the sake of television.
Yeah.
But this just seems like it allowed for enough opportunities to have some things where I'm losing people in the shadows, and that helps build the feel.
Yeah, it really did. It was very atmospheric, very much like the, I'm completely drawing a blank now right now.
For which?
We covered it a couple weeks ago.
For?
The Mind of Morbius.
Mandragora?
No.
The Braid of Morbius?
Yes, that one.
Oh, okay. Oh, sorry. When we're in the labs and things like that.
Jay Word's good.
Yeah. Jay Smart. Jay No Words. Yeah.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Yeah, but it was very atmospheric. It helped to set the feel, and like you said, it did help to add some of the tension to it. And
mm-hmm. It hides a little bit of the squaring off of the sets as well. But especially when you've got characters in the foreground, your principal speaking characters right in the foreground who are, you know, cast in three-quarter shadow, it really makes you feel, you know, if they're hiding and you can just barely make out their facial expressions, yeah, okay, again, I'm hiding there with you. We're trying to stick to the shadows. I buy mm-hmm. that. Just a lot of this that from that technical aspect I loved. I thought that the scoring was particularly subtle. You know, it kept in there just enough to be able to establish our eeriness at the necessary points. Fight sequences as they came through were legit. I'm big props. I'm still to this day, I'm watching to see whether or not Tom Baker was actually the one to carry Judith Paris across that little bridge over the abyss.
Oh, yeah.
You know, when she goes stiff.
I love that aspect too, because that kind of stood out to me, because you expect, okay, character's dying, so you expect them to kind of go limp. Mm-hmm. And so when Eldred is like constantly fighting, having to struggle to move because she's so rigid, it was different and it stood out, but it was like, that makes perfect sense and I love it.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. I mean, I was getting down to, I forget at one point, I think it, yeah, it was a point in the rewatch that I had done maybe about 5 or 6 days ago. And wife was passing through the room and she said, why is he doing the fireman's carry? She came through right at that sequence. So what's with the carry there? And I said, oh, well, you know, she's dying. She's poisoned and you know, she's got just minutes to live. The doctor's trying to get her to a chamber where she could be regenerated. And she actually asked why she wasn't going, you know, limp baby, sack of flour, dead weight. And I said, well, you know, this is a silicate-based life form. And she immediately goes, oh, yeah, good call. Got it. Walks out of the room. So yeah, from a pseudo scientific aspect, I kind of enjoyed a lot of the things that Baker and co-writer Martin, Bob Baker and Dave Martin put into this one. The some of the things they included about the dangers of irradiation were slightly accurate.
You know? It was yeah. And they were trying. They'd heard about radiation before.
Yeah. But I like things like the absorption of radioactive energy. You know, why were the missiles inert by the time they had the airstrike? Little things like that. It helped with the buy-in. And this was one that I do remember seeing segments of back when I was a kid. And at that time, you know, your suspension of disbelief and things were a heck of a lot stronger. As well as just frame of viewing reference. So yeah, 100% in. But yeah. I wanted to ask you both with regards to the buildup, you know, Haley, you're talking about the fact that we finally do understand that Eldred was just a power hungry bastard, who was considered a traitor and banished, believed to be destroyed. But even on the remote chance that he lived, the entire civilization, just on the chance, what did they say the odds were?
One in like 3 million or something.
Yeah. So based on that alone, you know what? That qualifies, guys. Let's just die out, because if he comes back, everybody's screwed. So as the doctor says, the ultimate sacrifice. But we build up to this whole idea where
but we're going to turn our entire planet into a booby trap just in case.
Right. Well, they're nothing if not thorough.
Well, see, like the way I understood it was that everything had been destroyed anyway, and they're like, well, we can either live in caves and stuff like that, and if we do that, there's a chance that he'll come back, or we can just go ahead and off ourselves. And so it was less that they were trying to, or more that they were trying to get rid of, or didn't want to live, subterranean lives or anything like that. And then it was just that
Eldred had like done the damage to the planet that basically made it uninhabitable for them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah. So
their option is to continue to live for, however long their existence remains naturally underground, which is contrary to their construct. So it's basically like making us live. Mm-hmm. Although being a silicate-based life form,
I was saying that's kind of, you'd think that, I don't know.
Seems kind of natural. I keep my head keeps going back to the rock biter from the Neverending Story. But anyway, I loved the final, like when they leaned on the line, when the pre-recorded message from his, what was his adversary's name that he had to
King
square?
Other guy.
Yeah, King Other guy. Started with an R. What the heck was it? Is this going to kill him?
Brassius? No, something like that.
Rokan.
Like Rokor.
Rokan.
Okay. Yeah.
It was spelled R-O-K, like rock. King Rock.
Rock on.
Yeah, King Rock on there. Sends him the message and just waits for just the right moment to call him the king of... And you knew it was coming. The king of nothing. Like, I expected three times during that sequence for him to drop that line on him. But it's still... I must have seen the story at least half a dozen times, and it still kills me every time. Like, yeah, you're just waiting for... You can't make it out in the makeup and all of the little chunks that were glued to his gob there. But you just watch him seethe. It's awesome. Love it. And he doesn't have enough stuff on the set. You could tell that when he realized it, and he wants to smash stuff and kick stuff around, and all he's got is just a crumbled body and a step stool. Nothing to take out his aggressions on. Oh, poor Eldred.
But I did like the fact that he used that space. You could tell he was pissed. And that was just the actor being like, he was going to use whatever space he could. If they weren't going to give him props to toss around and ruin the set, he was going to use the space they gave him.
Yeah.
So it was nice.
The fascinating thing, for those who want to pursue a little further, you get to that moment where we've always talked about the doctor and those moments where, based on the writing, based on the season, based on the tone, based on what they're doing with it, you look at opportunities where the doctor can either defeat their enemy or destroy. Do we strip them of their power, or does the enemy actually get obliterated, either directly or indirectly, by the doctor's hand?
Yeah.
Haley, did it cross your mind as you're seeing them pull the scarf across the abyss as the trip gag that, oh, wow, they're going to be rather quick to try to kill off an enemy here?
I don't know that I'm ever surprised by it, because it seems to come out of nowhere several times per doctor. Like, you wouldn't expect it, but it does happen.
Mm, okay. If you're curious, I mean, they do a little bit of they smooth it out a little bit, obviously, after the fact, when Sarah says, you know, do you think he's dead? And he's, oh, no, it's kind of hard to kill Eldred. You know, he's made of rock and everything. But we're not technically done with Eldred, thanks to Big Finish. Well, no spoilers. I mean, it's written in the title there. You get an installment of their Fifth Doctor series called Eldred Must Die. So instead of chanting Eldred Must Live, you get the flip side of it. It's actually a really good story. So anyway, the thing that we all kind of spiral down to at this point is that the psychic call comes out. You know, Doctor gets his migraine and mm-hmm. can tell that he's being summoned home. You know, big things are on the horizon. Not really sure if you can determine how long, when the Doctor says it's been so long since he's been contacted. Chronologically, it might be kind of tough to tell. But I wanted to get both of your opinions on how that final 3 to 4 minutes of the fourth episode play, in terms of how quickly it goes from the call to the departure. And the fact that it doesn't really leave the viewer a whole lot of an opportunity to process, let alone react. Haley, when this passed in front of your eyes and you didn't know it was coming, you give us the clearest indication of what our viewing audience, back in 75, thought of this. Take us through it.
Yeah, several things happen. First of all, I'm like, okay, the episode's over and we're going to get some banter in the TARDIS and then this episode's going to end. And I looked at the timestamp and there were still like 5 minutes left in the episode. I was like, what are they going to prattle on about for 5 minutes? And then, you know, Sarah's talking about all these things where she wants to leave. And I didn't really feel like there was anything in this particular episode or in the episodes leading up to this that's like, oh, that's obviously the thing that's going to push the companion out the door, the reason why she wants to leave. I don't think there was anything there. So it seems rather abrupt that she would want to leave. And then, you know, the call from home comes out of nowhere. So that he would abruptly boot her out is a little less, I don't know, disorienting. Maybe that's, I don't know if that's the right word I'm looking for. But anyways.
It gives it a bit of justification?
Yeah. Like, you can see why his asking her to leave would be abrupt. Her choosing to leave, I feel like, comes out of nowhere, and you don't really have a good understanding of why she's leaving or what led her to that decision.
Mm, okay. Interesting. I don't know if you could even recall the first time this was brought to your attention or anything, but looking at it now, I mean, even having a couple of watches in retrospect, how did the pacing, how did the meter with which we go from realization, or I should say from where Haley said, from when they're having a little bit of an argument, and she's starting to get worked up over the fact that, you know, she's starting to get tired of these near death, near misses, and he's clearly not listening. And she gets more and more worked up. She's doing what we would perceive, just as Haley said, perceived to be kind of the crying wolf. But, you know, that's it. I'm going to leave. I'm going to pack my bags. I'm going to go.
Yeah.
Walking towards the door. Yeah, opening the door.
You're right.
Yeah.
And then, well, just coincidentally, even though no such thing as coincidences exist, you know, he gets the call and realizes, okay, this is something where, as much as I care about her, this is a risk I'm not willing to put her through. Which fascinates me. You know, all the adventures they go on, all the scrapes they get into, and it's going home that is what he perceives to be one of the biggest risks for her.
Yeah.
So how does this still feel to you as far as just from a storytelling perspective and just from a 4 minutes to go, you got to get us through this. How fast are we going to race to this uncomfortable finish line? How does it still sit with you?
So it for like I had mentioned, realizing it at the halfway through the fourth episode or whatever, I was surprised. Like I got to the end and I remembered what was coming from the doctor. Like I knew what was going to happen, but still, like with Sarah Jane, you know, doing her whole, you know, I'm going to leave thing. I'm just sitting there still like, no, just pay attention to her, doctor. Calm down. Don't let her go. And so knowing that even that, like knowing that she was going to be leaving, it still kind of hurts coming, especially since you know that he's going to end up going. But yeah, like you said, it's the fact that this is now such a such a dangerous situation in his mind,
mm-hmm.
that he's going to kick her out. It hurts to watch even this long, or even this, however many times I've seen it, and knowing that it's still just because it's Sarah Jane, it hurts.
All right. Well, then, last thing I'll do. I don't mean to twist the knife any harder, or anything, but just because I'm curious, I'm genuinely curious to know.
Mm-hmm.
Haley, how did the actual parting itself strike you? The fact that there's no, you know, the way that they leave it, you know, the way that their last words are to each other. There's no embrace or anything of that sort. It's just standing at the door at the console, you know, don't forget me, don't worry, I won't. And then she's out the door and gone. Was that what you felt was justified? Or, you know, did it leave you wanting something different? Like you expected him to rematerialize 30 seconds later after she pats the dog on the head with a tennis racket and say, oh, come in and give us a big hug. And then he goes and dashes off.
I think it's okay, because I feel like, you know, we know Sarah Jane up to this point, and you know, like, she's going to go off and have her own adventures after this without the doctor. So I feel like it was okay.
We know.
Yes.
In hindsight.
No. What? Even without hindsight, just watching this episode, I feel like that's the sense you get from watching this episode.
Okay. All right. I'll go with that. Jay, how did it feel with you as far as that?
It still hurt. Like, it still drives me nuts that there wasn't that farewell, the there wasn't the embrace, that it just, I don't know. I would have liked to have seen more emotion from them. You know, whether or not it was a kind farewell or an emotional or something like that, there needed to be something. But I will say that one of the things that helps is so I'm working on getting somebody through, New Who. They've, you know, joined in when, and we were sitting down, it might have been 3 or 4 hours after I had finished watching this story, and she had just gotten to school reunion.
There you go.
And just jumping from that, it's so beautifully done. I have so much more appreciation for that episode now, that, if it hurts to watch the end of this story, absolutely go and watch school reunion, because you get the emotion that you're kind of, you know, her laughing at the doctor being like, that wasn't even self-quarantine, you know, it picks up right where it left off, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, I think that's a required viewing pattern at this point, is it that you close one and you've got to start the other, and then watch all the Sarah Jane adventures.
Yeah.
So that you can get to the funeral of the doctor, or the, was it, or Wedding of Sarah Jane? Whichever one where Matt Smith and Katie Manning are in it, because that's just the topper on the entire thing. Hearing Sarah Jane and Joe Grant reminiscing about, you know, did he do that? Does he still wear the goofy collars? Does he, you know, the so yeah. But this was the end of an absolute era, and it's the backstory on it, as far as, you know, as we alluded to when we finished doing Mandragora, and we were talking about the fact that, you know, she stayed on to sort of do a slight renewal or an extension to her contract so that she could do that particularly that story. Then they had to figure out exactly where they were going to write her out. The really scary thing was that at one time there was a script that was going to kill her off.
I'm Ooh. Really glad that didn't happen.
Yeah. It turns out, I mean, Hinchcliffe and company were not satisfied with the script itself. I don't think there's any way that you could have happily or contentedly kill off a character. So I don't know if they could have been given something where they would have said, yep, that's the way she's got to die. No. So they had to, you know, sort of revise it. This was Holmes, I guess, gave the Robert Holmes gave the extension to say, all right, can I go to Baker and Martin and find a way to be able to close her out at the end of the story more comfortably? So maybe that's why it feels a little shoehorned. Yeah,
it does feel tacked on. It doesn't feel like it's part of this episode. That's one thing I wish, is that there had been more in this story that led up to her departure.
Mm. Yeah. I think there were plans, according to, backstory trivia, there were plans that this story was going to provide for a revival of the Brig and Harry Sullivan. It's the reason why she makes a mention of them at the close. I'll say hello to them. I think the story at one time actually was going to involve them as the way to be able to contend with, calling in the cavalry when they're at the nuclear reactor. But, man, this could have been just a totally different story. Can you imagine? It would have been something where you've got the unit, so the Brig's there, you've got Harry Sullivan there, so you're calling in all
really
these old guards.
Would have had everything a Doctor Who episode could possibly have.
Right? Right? and then at knowing at some point, maybe one or two stories later, we kill off one of the most beloved companions. I mean, we look back and we say, Adric, things happen. There's collateral damage. We're about to get there very soon. Very soon. But man, it just amazes me sometimes how things fall into place in a very particular, amazing. So, okay. This kind of absolutely academic at this point, but rewatchability and recommendability.
Really wish I'd had time to rewatch it before doing the podcast, but I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And recommendability?
Very high, because I feel like it's a good, sampler platter of Doctor Who.
Mm.
So, not a first episode, but definitely, in an early pack, I could see why this would be a good episode, just because it gives you so many elements of what a Doctor Who story could be.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Oh, and the... it could prepare people, or just sort of reinforce for people that a lot of times a show can be very unpredictable.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me check my Post-it note real quick of notes. Unexplosion.
Unexplosion.
What?
Yes.
That's all I wrote.
Yeah.
Implosion. Unexplosion. Where did you get your doctorate, doctor? Anyways, and then we got a regeneration with the gender swap in this episode.
Yeah.
Very true. Yeah.
That is true. I took on a form that I thought would be more pleasing to you.
Mm-hmm.
Jay, rewatchability, recommendability.
Absolutely rewatchable. Be prepared for the feels.
Mm-hmm.
Recommendability, absolutely. Because it as Haley said, it's got a bit of everything. This is Doctor Who firing on all cylinders.
Yeah.
And it's a compelling story, which, it's the whole, is she a bad guy? Is she not? Nope, we're totally on the same side. Oh, wait, now we're not. There was that moment, watching it this time, because it's been a while since I've watched it, when she gets shot with the arrow thing, and I'm like, so we don't actually see it, fired off. It's just obviously because BBC budget, but it's all we hear is her scream and then turn around and she's holding this thing. And I'm like, did she stab herself with it to gain sympathy or something? And it's that kind of uncertainty throughout the whole story that just, it makes it such a compelling thing. So I think that this is fantastic for anyone to dip their hand in if they're trying to get into Classic Who.
Yeah, I think we're in perfect agreement on this one on all points. I think this is one that has to go into the must box. So as often as you want to go back and rewatch it and however many times you want to put it in someone else's hands, I think you're going to do just fine. I would make sure that people get an opportunity to see their relationship build between the two before you say goodbye to Sarah Jane, because otherwise people are just going to say, well, who was this? She just left in a huff. What was that all about? You need a little bit more backstory, but once you've got it, this is... this is exactly what this is required viewing, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah. So. Oh, yeah, very much so.
I've got to say, I'm looking at the calendar and I'm getting a little excited. Jay, I'm just really upset at this point that we're not going to have you alongside in LA in about 3 weeks' time now.
Oh, trust me, after looking at the guest list, I am upset about it too.
Yeah. So Galley One, 30th edition, Mark 30, however you want to call it, is 3 weeks away as we're recording. Mm-hmm. And I think the dust has settled on last minute. Oh, and here's another thing. I think Sean is done torturing us at this point, or at least, well, it's not really torture. Happy torture. No. It's, well, stopping our hearts. Let's just do that. But the roster is intense, as Jay mentioned. Haley, I wanted to ask you, looking over, knowing the opportunities of everybody that you may be able to bump into on an elevator. Or
Catherine Tate.
Okay, there you go. Done.
Okay. Do you want to finish that question?
Well, I want to see if there were any other names. I was going to say individuals, plural, on the list.
I mean, John Barrowman, of course,
always
is always a sight to see. But I feel like he's probably better to see from a distance. Whereas I would like to get stuck in the elevator with Catherine Tate.
Stuck in an elevator. That's good. We have, as far as just folks that we've gone on and on about for, well, years now, I should say. This is a veritable roster of what we consider to be our starting lineup for GPR superstars. Colin Baker, whom we love to death, we've spoken to him on another number of occasions, and is always going to be his lovely, irascible self. Catherine Tate, who we have not had a chance to see or speak with before. This is I can't wait for this. Pearl Mackey, who we missed.
Oh, I forgot Pearl Mackey. It got blown out of my head by the Catherine
That's
Tate announcement.
Right, because she was originally, correct me if I'm wrong, she was originally on the roster for Regen Who 4 and had to cancel because of obligations a week or so to go. John Barrowman will be there. We'll be fascinated to see what his hair color will be, as well as his wardrobe. Michael Jason. So we will have my Valyard there. I'm super psyched about that. Carol Ann Ford, Nicola Bryant, Katie Manning, Frazier will be there, of course. William Russell. Okay. So
a lot of these classic folks I adore. I love seeing them, but I've seen a lot of them before. It's the people from New Who that you don't get to see as often.
Yeah.
And even some of the periphery for New Who. So as I was mentioning to you both before recording started here, Fadi El-Sayed from Class will be there. Mm-hmm. So we're going to actually have a really, really interesting Class panel. I would love to discuss that series further. I think that's going to be a whole lot of fun. Who else we got here? Chase Masterson will be back. Always great. Jason Hagelery and Nicholas Briggs from Big Finish, mainstay. Let's see, Sarah Dollar will be there, Jody Hauser, Paul Cornell, and Rachel Stott. So you're going to have a lot of the comic writing and artistry team there for that do so much work for Titan. Really, really pleased about that. And Crystal D from the Doctor Who fan show and the recently published The Women Who Lived. So, and on and on and on and on and on. So this is just going to be a heck of a lot of fun. And I don't think we have too many time obligations, so we get to just wander and squee and try and lay out our programming grid as best we can.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah. But no, it's just going to be a lot of fun to absorb. Everything has been obviously sold out, but transfers are currently taking place. Sean and his staff have been really good about providing for individuals who, at the last moment, can't attend for various obligations. So transfers are facilitated. So get on your news groups, get on your Facebook groups, get on your discussion forums and things. If you're still trying to attend or you think you have the opportunity to attend and you're just looking to see if anyone is willing to transfer out existing badges, you may still have an opportunity to come join us. But it's going to be a lot of fun. So 3 weeks out.
Yeah, do that quickly, too.
Yeah. Yeah, please.
Yeah. So are we ready to jump into the news?
I think so. I think so. I think it is time. Let's admit something here.
Mm-hmm.
As all the final numbers, I don't like to talk ratings, but sometimes the numbers have to be addressed. if we've got the final rundown on Resolution as it played as a holiday special that fell on a holiday other than Christmas, and we thought maybe this was being done as much for strategic purposes as it was for the fact that Chibnall said, look, I think we've kind of exhausted the Christmas story or Christmas-related themes. And then we go and see the story, and I think we were all kind of on the same page that this didn't necessarily have to be a New Year story. It felt more like, you know, we were saying it felt more like a finale that just happened to have, you know, mention New Year's than it did being a New Year's story and have a holiday episode feel to it.
Yeah.
Now I'm wondering if the gamble paid off. What do we think? Take me through what we've learned here as a result of this.
I mean, we're looking at the numbers right now, and it's the lowest rated Christmas/New Year's special since the show returned in 2005.
Right.
It's the final review we're getting. And I think that makes sense because of the nature of the two different holidays.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas Christmas is a holiday where you're at home with the family all day, and then most people are off a few days after that as well.
Mm. Okay.
Whereas New Year's Day, you're a lot of people are hungover that day.
As they alluded to in the episode.
True story. But then also, most people have to go back to work the very next day. They don't have some days after that where they took an extended vacation for family time or whatever. So you probably didn't watch it the day it aired if you were considerably hungover. Or maybe, you know, you had to go out to a New Year's lunch as soon as you could drag yourself from bed.
Okay.
I just think it's a holiday that doesn't lend itself to watching something as it airs on TV like Christmas does.
Okay, understandable. I see what you're as many variables as there are in there. I do understand where you're coming from. But do these numbers, as far as I'm reading it, also include people who watched it through other resources? So it wasn't just live television broadcast. It was also a lot of the digital download and alternate devices. Yes. So this is a consolidated culminating figure. Mm-hmm. So does that just tell you then that maybe...
Still the vast majority of people watched it on a TV set.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, true. I'd love to see the same breakdown. I'm sure the data is available. I'll have to start just digging into the BARB's analysis for everything across this season. But is this indicative of... Is the distribution from television set to handheld devices to so forth... As far as the percentages, is this in keeping with where we were in the first quarter, you know, the first, say, three or four episodes of Series 10, middle set, end set, that kind of thing? Or is it just a matter of, it's the same distribution. It's, you know, 65% here and 25% here and 10% there on tablets and so forth. And that's all consistent. It's just overall, the numbers just are down in all categories by the time you get to New Year's, because for whatever reason. And then you're off to the races with the hypotheses as to how the series really struck people. Were they burned out? Was Series 11 just not enough of a huge explosion of interest to hold people to the point where they'll say, oh, yeah, and I'll stick around. I'll watch the New Year's Day episode too.
Yeah, and that's the thing is we saw the numbers consistently being kind of low on this one. And a lot of that is chalked up to the fact that people aren't watching TV the way that they used to anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and models like this, like viewing numbers and stuff like that, aren't keeping up with that. The thing that you have to look at is things like what percentage of the audience did you catch, mm-hmm. or what was the audience appreciation index?
Yep.
You know, things like that, which those have been on par, if not better than they have been for most of it.
Yeah, agreed.
So the show is still doing great. It's just not doing great the way that the BBC wants it to.
Yeah, viewer behavior itself has shifted a bit.
Exactly.
I gotta wonder. I know, and maybe you two can speak to this as well. I know a number of people, because I speak to a good number of Whovians of various natures and backgrounds and so forth over the course of any given day, if not week, because of the nature of my work. And a number of them, I couldn't really put a percentage, but I'm going to say it's more than a two-digit number, will say, oh, I absolutely plan on watching these things. I just haven't had the opportunity yet. because, you know, we happen to be sort of strange use cases. You know, we're not going to wait more than a matter of, you know, 30 minutes to start watching content once we know it's available. If it's sitting on the DVR or it's airing on TV, we're there.
We're sitting there, refresh. Nope, not there yet. Refresh. Right, nope, not there yet.
You know, we're at one far end of the poles there.
Yeah.
Well, with this particular show, we kind of have to stay on top of it. Sure. What we're doing with the content.
Precisely.
But I know me personally, there are so many shows that like I'm way behind on. And after a few episodes, you're like, I'll just wait until the season's over and binge it all at once.
Precisely. Exactly, which is why I would love to know. I don't know if the Broadcasting and Research Audience Board keeps these numbers dynamic so that, you know, I can extend the date range and say, okay, to date, what are the viewing numbers? Not just what it did within the first week or the first however long, you know, whatever stretch ending in this many days after date of broadcast. I want to know, as of this day, even if I'm, whatever, 90 days after the episode originally aired, now, at this moment, how many people, whatever the case may be. I don't think it's a dynamic number like that, but it doesn't account for exactly what you're saying, Haley, these folks that say, I'm going to stack it up. I'm going to purchase the season on iTunes or what have you.
Yeah. I mean, because binge watching is a real thing. People do it all the time now. And it's
more and more so, yeah.
I mean, honestly, there are tons of times where it's not even like, I'll wait until the series is done. There are some shows that I'm watching where I'm like, okay, I've got 3 or 4 seasons saved up. I'm going to sit down over the weekend that I have nothing planned. I'm going to do laundry and housework, and I'm going to have it on the entire time I'm doing that.
Mm.
So it's, you know, you really have to take into account the fact that sitting and watching TV is not the same as it used to be, and you really have to update your metrics accordingly.
Agreed. Haley, I have a question for you.
Yeah.
So when you do get stuck with Catherine Tate in the elevator in LA, are you going to talk to her about Doctor Who? Or are you going to talk to her about anything and everything else that you can think of?
To be fair, I don't think I've seen her in anything but Doctor Who.
Okay. You might want to bone up a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, you got a couple of weeks here. You know, I'll get some Shakespearean productions. I'll get As You Like It into your hands and a couple of other things, so that you can meet her on even ground. Because apparently, as much as she's willing to return to the show and would love to work with Jodie because she believes her to be a fantastic acting talent, she's not a sci-fi viewer. In fact, Jay, how little of a sci-fi viewer is she?
None at all. She does not watch Doctor Who.
Has not and still continues not to. It's just not her thing.
I think one of the famous things that most people, like, if you've seen her in some of the game shows that the BBC did, one of the viral clips is her being like, I thought his last name was Who, and he was a doctor. I thought he was Mr. Who happened to be a doctor. And that just sums up exactly how much Catherine Tate knows about this show.
But it also sums up how professional she can be to be handed a role, handed a script, and she'll kill it even if she has zero interest in it.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a great audio interview out there that you can go ahead and listen through the entirety of. It's always entertaining to listen to her speak about her craft. But you will hear some things that are both very positive about her experiences working with her good friend, the human eggplant. I'm sorry, David Tennant. Did you see what Georgia Tennant tweeted today? It was just the eggplant emoji. I love where this conversation is going. but then the other half of it is just her saying, you know, I'm really not a sci-fi viewer. You know, it's not a particular genre that appeals to me. I don't generally follow it or quite understand it. So, I'd love to be involved with further projects, but yeah, don't ask me a lot of really complicated questions. So, if you're going to meet us at Gallifrey, in 3 weeks, you might want to, be careful about the phrasing of your questions and don't ask her opinions on the viability of the mindset of Dr. Donna and things like that, because you're not going to get the answer that you hope for.
All the people who are going to ask her what villain would she want to face, and she doesn't know about any of them except the one she's already faced.
I don't know. Henry the Fifth?
Darth Vader. He's a villain, right?
Speaking of getting unexpected or unintended answers, Chibnall's at it again.
We're the right distance away from the next season to get random vague statements about the next season.
Yes, yes. But I love the way he phrases these. The kind of the, oh yeah, that's something I should think about. Or the, uh-huh, yeah, that's worth considering. Oh, yeah, maybe. I love these things. So it's, or just saying, answering a question by saying, you know what, that's a great question. And then never really giving a response to it. So they're going at Chris to find out things that we really want to know. Like, you know, now that you've done a season of, Jay, help me out here. It's not world building. It's sort of reestablishing the storyline for potentially new viewers. Is there a way that you would phrase that?
I don't know. Now that you said world building, that's stuck in my head, and I know it's inaccurate.
Yeah, 'cause it's more than that.
It's reestablishing.
Okay.
You know, reintroducing the world.
There you go. Okay. Now that that's been done, does that now mean that he feels comfortable going into Series 12 to say, all right, now that I've brought you up to speed on how Doctor Who does its thing, here's some of the cool stuff that we typically, meaning pre-me, do. And we get back to classic monsters and recurring characters and on and on and on. But it also, he got post point blank with one of our burning questions, where the hell is Yaz and why doesn't she speak or given the opportunity to speak?
Mm-hmm.
So we should devote an entire game to what would Yaz do? And we'll go back and we'll look at past Whovian situations, both classic and new, and just say, all right, swap out that character, put Yaz right there, right then. What would she do? I'm kind of liking this. I might run with this game idea. But yeah, all of his answers were super freaking vague.
Mm-hmm.
Quote, I think that some of these questions may be answered in the forthcoming season.
Yay!
Lock that down, I guess.
Yeah, call that done. But this is what we get. I don't know. I know we're going to have a lot of conversations about hypotheticals. And I know that he's going to make a few more statements, appearances. Maybe they'll get him on the – if they get him on the Graham Norton show, he's done. Because I know Graham's not going to let him go. He's like a bulldog when it comes to getting something useful. Even if it's all in jest, he'll find out a way to get his guest to say something potentially either spoilery or at least commit to something in the framework of a joke. So hope for something like that. Mm-hmm. But yeah, this is the beginning of the smokescreen.
It's the beginning of the dark times.
Well, it's just, you know, it's going to be that thing where he just meters out information, speaks in vaguities that make Stephen Moffat who's out, at his beach home right now, go, yeah, that's well done. Yeah, nice job. Dodge that.
He Moffat explains well.
We don't have a Chibnall splaining. It doesn't sound right. Got to come up with a new term for that.
A chibsplanation?
A chibsplanation, yes.
Oh, God. We're going punch drunk already. And it's
okay,
not
we've
even
got a
like...
year to figure out a good format, too, about that one.
We will. So. Yeah. Contributions welcome, folks. Feel free to chime in on what you think what do they call this? Sniglets? A sniglet is what you call a word that isn't a real word, but it makes sense to define something else. So, yeah, come up with the appropriate sniglet for a Chris Chibnall vague allusion to a potential fact. So,
yeah,
that's your mission.
All right. So Chiblets. next week, we're so anyone that's listened to the show for a bit knows that we enjoy playing our games. Mm-hmm. It's a fun way to pass the time while we're waiting for more than a year for new content.
You don't have to keep harping on that, Jay.
Just making sure everyone's aware.
Were we?
Here, I'm going to fill out my Doctor Who calendar for the year real quick.
Yeah. Oh, done.
Hey, nice. You're done.
Whew. Didn't even have to sharpen my pencil.
You want to give us a brief synopsis of what this game is that you're going to torture us with next time?
Yep. The work in progress name, unless I can find out something better for it, is Hooperlatives. So the whole idea is the most, the best, the most likely to, the kind of things you would put in a yearbook. But it has to do with the characters that we know and love from across the 55 years of the legacy of the show. So it may be something like... character most likely to get an article of clothing stuck in an escalator. You know, and of course, you know, what if I would go to, well, Baker's scarf, you know, or something of that sort, you know?
I think Osgood's more likely to get it stuck in an escalator.
I was going
to
say Baker's scarf, but around Osgood's neck, yeah.
Very well done. So that's the kind of thing that we're going to do. So we'll have some categories for these things, and I might even, if I can get them composed early enough, I might take a small subset of them and open them up on social media so that folks can get a chance to put in their answers as well, so so you can be a part of the game as well. So that's my plan.
Well, then that actually gives us a good indication to actually go and find us on social media. We're on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio. You can find us on Facebook. We're also in Instagram, which we haven't done a whole lot with lately, but I think we need to.
It's growing pretty quickly. We've got a lot of folks that are picking us up there. So Instagram at Gallifrey Public Radio. If you just want to go with the quick visuals, and it allows you really rapid access to the episodes and get into a conversation with us. If Facebook isn't your thing, I totally understand. But then, and then, of course, there's always the ongoing conversations on the recently brushed up website. GallifreyPublicRadio.com. Did a little cleanup in there. Realized, oh, that form's broken. I should fix that thing. So,
you watched one of those tidying shows this weekend?
I did.
All my friends are watching them.
Yeah, everything that did not bring us joy is now gone.
I did. No.
We lost like 250 episodes of the podcast, guys.
No, I put that into the ultra joy basket. Pure joy, no joy, ultra joy.
So yeah, and while you're finding us on social media, go ahead and go over to iTunes or Stitcher or wherever it is that you get the podcast from, and leave us a review. Let us know how we're doing. Let us know how we can improve. You know, whatever it is that's on your mind, leave it there. But until next week, this has been episode 319 of Gallifrey Public Radio. Until next week, this is Jay saying, I don't know why people keep trying to get Sarah Jane to be a Time Lord assassin. She's terrible at this.
But this is Kier saying, till we meet again, Sarah.
And this is Haley saying, you could have had it, but you didn't have what it takes. An evil hand. I mean, come on, who here does? Huh? Kier doesn't. Jay doesn't. You know who gave me an evil hand, right? I've been writing kill, kill, kill on everything. It's crazy. It's crazy. Anything could happen. Evil
hand. We'll see you guys next week.
I'll see.
Bye.
Thanks for joining us for another episode of Gallifrey Public Radio. Join us each week for new episodes. We love getting feedback from listeners, so don't hesitate to share your thoughts with us. You can email us at feedback@gallifreypublicradio.com, tell us on Twitter at Gallifrey Radio, or on Facebook at facebook.com/Gallifrey Public Radio. You can also leave us a voicemail for inclusion in future shows at 210-802-1477. That's 210-802-1GPR. You should also go to GunnaGeek.com and check out lots of other high-quality geek-centric shows, or visit forums.GunnaGeek.com to talk about anything geeky with us or the community.